For the month of June, I'm offering the Wealthy Wealthy Life's Summer Replay Series. Each week, I will be re-releasing a classic episode from the early days of my podcast, with each episode focusing on a unique area of mastery. For those who weren't subscribed to the podcast back then, this is a great opportunity for you to hear some of my best archive interviews. And for those of you who have been around since the very beginning, this is your chance to revisit those interviews and millionaire takeaways. For summer replay number 3, I'm going with an early episode that is truly timeless, episode number 4, where I interviewed Joan Rosenberg, celebrity psychologist and author of Mean Girls, Meaner Women. While I've interviewed a number of amazing health experts, most are focused on the physical body. I feel as though emotional health is too often missing from the health conversation, and this episode dives right in. We'll talk about trauma, depression, difficult feelings, and mastering your emotions. Have fun. Joan, it's so great to be here with you. It's been a long time since we've seen each other.
It has been a long time. It's phenomenal to be back with you. So it's just great to see you, great to be in your energy, and great to see what you're doing with everybody in terms of all the content that you're delivering. It's phenomenal across the board.
Well, thank you. Well, you're a part of that content. So where I really want to sort of expose your teachings and your messaging, because it's so important. And I mean, you know what I've been through. You're a big part of my journey. I think you were part of the PTSD diagnosis and trying to work with me when I was going through that. But in a new sort of functional psychology way, and just being there and listening. Tell the audience a little bit who you are, but this sort of new approach to psychology, this unconventional way of thinking about our emotions, and that might be a little countercultural.
It is. I like to think of it as counterintuitive. It's it's an emotional mastery approach, and the essence of it has to do with helping people handle unpleasant feelings. There's a tendency for most of us to want to avoid experiencing that, thinking that we can stuff it down and we can push it away and not deal with it. And the truth is, it comes back to bite us, or it actually prevents us and inhibits us from living a life that's full of vitality and aliveness.
It's so true. And I know from personal experience is that part of my PTSD breakdown, if you will, came from I've always been resilient and strong. And I thought that was part of what I was supposed to do, is like this high performers, just not address all that trauma and all those issues that had been there forever. And if I ignored them, they would never bother me. They would never interfere in my life until one day they popped up and they were everywhere. So I know from personal experience, the approach of ignoring them and pretending like they don't exist doesn't work.
That's absolutely true. In fact, the more you distract, the more you disconnect, and what I like to say, the more you suppress, the more you lead yourself down a path of what I call soulful depression. And the first thing I think that shows up after that is the more you distract, over time it shows up as body symptoms or anxiety or feeling more vulnerable or feeling out of control. And then it drifts into kind of feeling like I like to think it's like a sort of a split off sense of self. You're experiencing stuff, but you actually can't feel your experience. So what people will describe is kind of feeling numb or dead inside or depressed. And for me, that's the language of the split. And then it just gets worse from there, you know, isolation, alienation, and sometimes even the despair that leads to suicidality.
And so much of this is by suppression. Is that what you're saying? That we're not addressing our feelings? We don't know how to approach our emotions, and by virtue of ignoring them, at some age, they sort of come back and bubble up? Or how does all that work?
Well, I think it starts to show itself in different forms. A colleague of mine likes to say that what doesn't get emotionalized gets physicalized. Mm-hmm. So we have so many different ways to distract ourselves. Could be drugs. For men, it's often pornography. It could be shopping for women. It could be, and we can go on and on and on over the list. And I think I've identified 30, 40 different ways to do that. In fact, having feelings about having feelings is a way to distract and disconnect. Anxiety is, for me, a disconnection. So the more one does that and distracts and disconnects in those ways, the more you start down that path of soulful depression. You know, it's actually been my belief that some of the depression that people are treating with medication is actually not true biological depression. It's what I call the soulful depression. It's us being disconnected from our feelings, the very thing that brings us aliveness and vitality. And instead, we then travel down this path of soulful depression.
Well, and I think that, tell me if you agree or not, but there's kind of two things going on. Is there's the suppression, mm-hmm. and the what can manifest by suppressing and suppressing and suppressing, especially when there's been trauma or maybe
Absolutely.
Some real underlying issues
Absolutely.
That never get addressed or sort of explored and taken care of. But there's also the piece where we don't know how to get in touch with our emotions, right? That it's not necessarily, suppression usually too, but there's also this feeling angry is bad or this feeling's bad, or we don't even know what we're feeling. Like we're so busy and in our heads and going, we're not even slowing down enough to say, how do I feel?
Right, right.
I
totally agree with you. And if we stay fast paced like that mm-hmm. and ignore what's going on inside of us, and only are paying attention to what's going on outside of us, we will miss that. What's really fascinating to me is that, and I think also what people don't realize, is that you come to know what you're feeling by bodily sensation. And so when we have those reactions like, oh, I'm feeling sad, like my heart literally feels heavy, or a past client of mine, when she would get angry, she'd feel heat at the back of her neck. Mm-hmm. Or another one would get angry, she'd feel heat in her arms. So it's different for all of us. But when we don't pay attention to our own internal signals and we don't notice what we're noticing, or we're not aware of what we're aware of inside of us, then yeah, we dismiss it, we run right past it, and we stuff it right down.
And it's an epidemic. I mean, I think more and more, and just more people are feeling depressed. More of us are anxious. More of us are seeking medication. I mean, I wouldn't even guess what the prescription for this sort of medication is on the psychological side. But I'm guessing it's probably pretty high, right?
Yes, very high. Very high. And I wonder if that's why placebos work. Is that they're, because they actually feel like they're treating something, but they're just getting started down a path and go, oh, I feel better.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know, as a high performer and on the track that, you know, I was on, and
yep.
then I had my crash and had to deal with PTSD and go to the dark, dark place at the
right.
very bottom, is that there was a lot of that learning. Like I had to, you know, get in touch with my emotions. But before that, I just went sort of down this traditional route. And what happened? Talk therapy meds.
Right.
And next thing I knew, I was just medicated, and nothing was getting better with the medication.
No, in fact, some medications, oddly enough, can actually almost take away the experience of the feeling. So I totally understand what you're saying with that. Yeah.
So what do you see? Like, what's sort of this new approach? Like, well, let me back up, actually, before we even jump to that, because you said something that triggered a conversation I had. John Gray's been in the Wealthy Wealthy conference with us, and I did a podcast with him, and, you know, he's Men Are For Mars, Women Are For Venus. Really smart guy. But he was a monk for 9 years. So
right.
He told that story. But when I had dinner with him, it was really interesting because we talked about life as a monk and then lives of monks or people that are really like on this meditation path. And he said it's a great thing to reach this place where you can meditate and you can get out to that space and you can disconnect. But he said a lot of monks and people that are just in that realm, they actually get sick or they actually experience some tough things in life because they think if they get there, they don't have to deal with their emotions. So they never deal with these emotions. They never get to the emotion. They think they can just skate right over them. And he's now to the place as, you know, psychology too, like, no, you want to go here and be able to use this meditation as a practice to disconnect and look at your body, but really somatically get back in. Because if not, it's still going to come up. Even as a monk, you really still have to address those feelings things.
That's fascinating.
So, yeah, so I wanted to know what you would, I guess that's what you're noticing. It's like, yeah, you still have to deal with those feelings.
No, you still have to do it. Yes, absolutely. Again, I like to think of feelings as our experience of aliveness. So it's really our spontaneous reaction to life. And so it doesn't matter whether it's pleasant or unpleasant to us. It's our spontaneous reaction to life. Most of us just want to feel the pleasant stuff. So if the monks are out there just trying to meditate their way through the stuff that's also unpleasant to them, yes, it's then what they're doing is they're numbing out from they're meditating, if you will, away from the full experience of aliveness. And they just want to stay chill, but not really feel the fullness of the whole range of their experience.
Well, and it turns physical. So what John was saying is that they get these cancers, these get, the, you know, it does manifest. They're not addressed and they're manifesting. You'd think like, no, it's this low-key life. You're meditating. You're going to live to 200. And he's like, no, they're actually really dying. And he brings it back.
Same
and so
thing.
It's right in line with what you're saying.
What doesn't get emotionalized gets physicalized.
Yeah, yeah. That's deep. I mean, that I think part of, you know, the integrative conversation that we're having is that, again, we've lived in sort of these siloed ways of believing, and it's like it's a very separate, our emotions from our physicalness, and it's like you're saying, like, oh, no, our diseases can manifest from,
yes, absolutely,
from being emotionally unhealthy,
right,
and not addressing these things,
right, yes,
let alone the suffering.
Yeah, people who complain of backache, they complain of stomach distress, neck pain, shoulder pain. It's carrying the burdens of life. I mean, the other thing to do is to think of body as metaphor. So if my shoulders hurt, then I can start. Well, what am I shouldering, metaphorically,
ooh,
emotionally,
that's good.
You know, what we think of it in those kinds of ways. So, you know, if my feet hurt or my knees hurt, then those are support elements. So how am I not feeling supported in my life?
Wow.
So, I mean, there's many ways to start to think about the body as metaphor for what's happening emotionally for us too.
I've read and studied this. I'm curious if this is what you're noticing to be true, especially with trauma and background and stuff. A lot of pains that are starting to show up. Mm-hmm. People go to the doctor, there's nothing there, It's like in your head, and then they throw you on medication maybe. And it's really none of that. It's because actually the trauma has manifested itself somewhere as a physicalness in the body.
That's correct.
Is that what you're noticing?
Right. Yes,
like,
there's a shift.
I mean, it sounds a little new age, airy fairy, but I mean, scientifically,
well,
we're getting really back to
it's
the
actually,
proof, right?
It's actually not. I probably remember this statistic from, it could be even 30 years ago, when I was helping in a family medicine clinic, and I remember one of the doctors saying to me then that 85% of what they saw was more psychologically based in a family medicine clinic.
Wow.
85%. And that we're talking in the 1980s. So I just have to assume that the statistic is somewhat parallel, mm-hmm, to what people report to medical clinics, that it's more socially acceptable to show up with a physical pain than it is
so
to show
true.
Up with an emotional pain.
Right.
And again, people don't like to experience the unpleasantness. So where do they put it? They'll put it in their body. Well, I'm tired. I'm fatigued. I'm depressed. Well, actually, the depression might not be depression. It might be sadness.
Well, explain that. What's the difference?
Well, the sadness, again, it's a natural reaction to life experience. Think of depression as, there's almost, sometimes people talk about it as adding like a self-loathing piece to it. So there's some kind of self-judgment that's occurring, mm-hmm, in addition to the pain that you're experiencing.
Got it.
So that it's, and again, for me, it goes back to the soulful depression idea, that somehow I'm now cutting off from me. And so if I'm disconnecting from what I know to be true in me, and the key is the truth I know to be, the truth I know is, it leads me to wellness. And if it, in fact, I call this knowing what I know is the path to wellness, and allowing myself to experience what I know,
mm-hmm,
path to wellness,
mm-hmm,
trying not to know what I know is the path to soulful depression.
Oh, wow.
And dis-ease on multiple levels.
Well, and like you said, I really, let's talk about that for a second. This idea of, it's socially acceptable to go to the doctor, but not socially acceptable to go to address maybe some emotions or whatever, because there's so much a stigma attached. And especially achievers, performers, and entrepreneurs, and business people, and you know, like, that's total stigma, because if I'm an achiever, if I'm a boss, if I'm a manager, if I'm this, that, I mean, I can't have emotional problems. What would that say about me? So it's very quiet, and then that can even manifest into different things. But I think that's part of the problem, right?
Like, oh, absolutely. So it's
like emotions are part of being human.
Exactly. And as I'm listening to you, what's traveling through is I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't want to be vulnerable.
Yes,
I don't want to be
vulnerable.
And I don't want to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Except vulnerability, when we can choose to be vulnerable, we are at our greatest strength, our greatest emotional strength.
You have to say that again, because that's...
I think of vulnerability in two different ways. One I call non-conscious vulnerability, which is it's innate in all of us. Where there's a protective mechanism. We're programmed for growth or protection, and so there's a process that occurs for all of us where we sense danger, safety, danger, and life threat. That I call non-conscious vulnerability. I realize it's a little heady, but and then there's vulnerability that we choose. So you doing the podcast is a vulnerability you're choosing. You standing up in front of a crowd, you owning a business, you leading, you putting yourself out there to be in an athletic competition. It doesn't matter what it is. Socially going and asking somebody for a date. All of those are active choices of being vulnerable. And when we choose to be vulnerable, we're at our greatest emotional strength.
Wow.
So a leader, an entrepreneur who doesn't want, high achiever who doesn't want to admit, I need help or those kinds of things is backing away from the vulnerability. Except the vulnerability is a strength.
Mm-hmm. But there's so much stigma around like mental illness and it versus just emotions, and things are popping up and let's take care of these. Exactly. Like any, like a flu that will pop up, let's take care of it.
Right.
Yeah. So how do we break some of the stigma?
You know what? It's more and more of us getting out there and one, talking about these very issues. The second I would imagine is modeling. Again, as you have done at the Wealthy Wealthy Conference and in other places, it's telling our stories of where we were hurting and then kind of that discovery process of what led us out of that.
Yeah, and it is a big part of why I share my story. It's very vulnerable and hard to admit even, you know, that place I have been and the darkness and the shame and, you know, just all the horrificness. But I am opening up and sharing that story now to hopefully give permission to others.
Like, that's exactly what it does. As soon as you open that door, everybody else can go, oh, whew. I can kind of wiping the sweat from their brow and going, me too.
Yeah. And the gift of it is number one, going through it actually gave me so much more life perspective that I had missing before going in. Mm-hmm. So going through it actually ended up, I don't want to go through it again, but
and you won't.
It didn't. Thank you. But I wouldn't have so much perspective had I not. So gift number one. But gift number two is really dealing with my psychology, really addressing that trauma and really getting in touch with somatically and the emotions. It gives a whole, like you said, it's a whole new way to experience life, like just to be one with it.
Right.
It's really a beautiful feeling, even when you don't feel so good. And
right.
But it's
right.
Like getting permission to feel bad. We don't have permission to feel bad in this day and age.
That's true.
And if you do, you medicate it and hide it.
Yeah. And right. And I don't want that. I don't mm-hmm. think you want that. The interesting thing is when I think of someone who doesn't have access to their feelings, that's my, and so that they're, as I was saying earlier, they're kind of split off. They know that they're, it's like they know that they're upset or angry or sad or something, but they actually can't feel it. So they don't have access to the vitality and aliveness that actually is within them and helps kind of define our aliveness. I think of that as hell on earth. That's my definition of hell, is that you're physically alive, but emotionally dead. And so the key here is that you want the full range of your whole emotional experience, so you have the full range and the full intensity of kind of the colors and the richness of also being fully alive.
Right. Well, so the question that comes to me is, how do we do that? Because we go in, we go to the doctor, even now just regular doctors,
sure.
They will listen, say, Joan, you need, here's some you're depressed, and here's some antidepressant medications. Mm-hmm. We're not even going to the psychologist or the therapist, and there's so much great therapy these days.
Right.
But we're going to our MD. We think it's a physical thing. There's nothing physical. So then they go ahead and prescribe the medication, and then we get dulled, and then it continues. So how do we break that cycle? Like, what do we do? How do we break that and get into this aliveness and get in touch with our feelings and can feel good about it? And how do you do that?
You know, the first thing I would do is I would have someone ask themselves, am I trying not to know what I know? Am I trying to keep things out of my awareness, whether it's thoughts, feelings, observations, reactions, doesn't matter what it is, am I trying to keep out of my awareness things that are already in my awareness? Or do I allow myself to be in touch with what I know?
Well, then, how do you feel sad? I mean, how do you, like, what's your advice for that? I guess maybe just give permission to people, like, sadness or whatever emotion only stays for a while, and then the next emotion
comes.
Yeah,
well,
like,
that's right.
I think that's part of what we're avoiding. Okay. Like, I don't want to feel sad. Or,
right. So
I don't want to feel this. Like, if I can just medicate or just ignore it or whatever.
Right. Okay. So let's go to the mythology about that.
Okay.
So, which is what I think you were starting down in terms of the unconventional approach. Mm-hmm. Our feelings are temporary. They're not permanent states. They're not like blocks of ice. They're more like steam, or they're more like water. So, and you work a lot with this concept of flow, the energy flow. So that's think of feelings as kind of a flowing state, and it will pass through. So just like pleasant experiences pass, so will unpleasant ones. And the truth is that the feeling that we have will only last roughly 90 seconds. So that if someone can handle their whatever it is that they're feeling unpleasant, whether it's anger, sadness, disappointment, you can name it, then the key here is just to allow themselves to ride that wave. Like they're walking on an ocean shore, just ride the wave. They can body surf it, they can boogie board, they can canoe. I don't care what mental path or visual image works for them. But that they can, the key is to ride the waves of unpleasant feeling. Just know that they're temporary and they won't be in a permanent state, and that they can make their way through that. It's not just one wave. You've got to be open to the possibility that it's multiple waves,
mm-hmm.
and then it will pass. The beauty of it is if they stay with the feeling, the insight comes after.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the insight without the work.
It's so true.
So you have to stay with the experience, and then you start to accrue the insight and hopefully wisdom from your experience.
So that's talking about the how-to for mm-hmm. day-to-day life, just
right.
riding the wave of different feelings, be in touch with that. And what about feelings we're suppressing with trauma or with some serious things? Again, we've been believed, especially as business people, achievers, performers, stuff that stuff down. So what's the healthy thing to do, that especially if it starts bubbling up? What do you recommend as far as therapy, or what do people do when they start noticing these things? Or like, how do you start addressing some of the stuff that's been buried?
The absolutely most simple thing to do is to take out a pad of paper and a pen, and actually do it physically by writing as opposed to digitally, because there's something that activates the brain in a certain way when you're actually putting pen to paper as opposed to typing. But people can journal. That's the absolute first thing that they can do. Actually, that's the second thing that they can do. The first thing that they can do is to pause and to self-reflect. Just take the time to self-reflect. The second thing that they can do is journal. The third thing that they can do is go talk to people that they feel close to in their environment. The fourth thing that they can do is to go find mental health professionals or parallel professionals in their lives that can offer good counsel. And I'm talking about good counsel as opposed to opinion. So I might go to somebody and say, well, I think I need to work through X. And the person says, no, you don't. You're fine. That's not a problem, except it's still a problem to you. Seek good counsel as opposed to just opinion. So then it would be, and then there's such a variety of therapies out there. So it would be, you can do art therapy, you can somatic therapy, you can do talk therapy, you can do equine therapy, you can do whatever it is that's going to allow you to help move you back inside you, to start to be aware of the thoughts and the feelings and the stories you've run and the stories you've lived out of, as opposed to who you can become.
And just like we go to a physical therapist, if, you know, we do something to our leg or, you know, we
exactly.
go to physical therapy, therapy is a good thing.
It's actually a really good thing. And
it's part of wellness and being healthy. And
absolutely.
Our emotional therapy is included in that.
Absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
It should be included as part of being healthy versus the stigma of something's wrong.
Right.
Would you agree
right.
with that?
Yep, absolutely. And again, be around people who are pursuing something similar. So make a commitment to investing into that kind of wellness and be around people who help support that growth. We're all on that journey, even if we don't think we're on that journey. It's all a journey.
It's part of being human.
It is. That is exactly.
All right, so we need to wrap up.
Okay.
So to wrap up, this really wealthy, everything we've been talking about is about sort of breaking old mindsets, breaking sort of that conventional wisdom that we're sort of realizing is no longer true or isn't serving us in today's day and age. So what's one thing that you can think of that's just off the top of your head that's sort of a mindset or that's stuck right now that from your point of view is just absolutely wrong and you'd like to bust that?
First one I would start with is to embrace change. That the more you can embrace change and be willing to be uncomfortable, the more meaningful and the happier and healthier your life will be. The more you believe that, do I want stability and routine for people? Yes, of course, because that brings us a certain sense of pleasure for us, except that if people cannot handle change, it makes life a heck of a lot more difficult. So the first would be to embrace change and welcome that in their lives mm-hmm. and accept the periods of quiet and stability with grace and gratitude.
I love that. Joan, it's such a pleasure. Thank you for being here. You know I adore you. I'm very grateful for you being there for me when I was going through some of my darkest, toughest times. And I don't know if I've said it personally, but really I knew you were on the other side of a phone and you really helped me make it through. So
well,
thank you.
And I'm always here.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Love you, girl.
Right back at you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet.
And so ends another episode of The Wealthy, Wealthy Life. This was one more millionaire strategy that will make you wealthy while keeping you healthy. Before I leave, remember that if you want to get it all together, then make sure to sign up for a free online training session at howto.money. You will learn my signature formula for transforming your life from debt to multimillionaire. It's already helped thousands of others and it can help you too. And it's the only money-making system that makes your health your number one asset. So if you're curious how it all works, visit howto.money and sign up today. Remember, it's free, so why not invest some time in learning how to money? Again, that's howto.money, howto.money. As always, be sure to subscribe to this podcast to make sure that you catch next week's Millionaire Strategy. Signing off, this is Christina Wise, your personal guide to having it all. Here's to living a wealthy, wealthy life. I'll see you next time.